When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson is a multifaceted guitar shop offering guitar instruction, new and used guitars and amplifiers, and all accessories. Instead of experiencing the total hassle of a big box store or a snarky boutique, take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson and experience what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We love guitars.
Welcome to another podcast. It's SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and, of course, our friends with the Madison Firefighters, Madison Teamsters, and Madison Teachers. All right. Happy New Year, John Harrison Nichols. Welcome to 2019.
Happy New Year's, my friend. It's already looking to be a good year.
Oh, absolutely. All right, let me start out with the president sounding like possibly one of the biggest lunatics that's ever...
Okay, so what you're saying is some things haven't changed?
Correct.
All right,
this is unusually bad, though.
General Mattis thanked me profusely for getting him $700 billion. He couldn't believe it. General Mattis thanked me even more the following year when I got him $716 billion. He couldn't believe it. But General Mattis was so thrilled. But what's he done for me? How has he done in Afghanistan? Not too good. Not too good. I'm not happy with what he's done in Afghanistan, and I shouldn't be happy. But he was very happy. He was very thankful when I got him $700 billion, and then the following year, $716 billion. So, I mean, I wish him well. I hope he does well. But as you know, President Obama fired him, and essentially so did I. So Taliban is our enemy. ISIS is our enemy. We have an area that I brought up with our generals 4 or 5 weeks ago where Taliban is here, ISIS is here, and they're fighting each other. I said, why don't you let them fight? Why are we getting in the middle of it? I said, let them fight. They're both our enemies. Let them fight. Sir, we want to do it. They go in and they end up fighting both of them. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. I think I would have been a good general, but who knows?
Don't you have to join the military to become a general?
Well, that's start, yeah. And I think the bone spurs would have slowed him down.
Yeah.
In those initial stages. In many senses, I think that Trump is similar to some generals in history. It is true. But I don't think they fall into the good category. No, I mean, look, the tragedy and, weirdly enough, the strength of Donald Trump is that he actually believes stuff like this. Don't you think? I mean, when he's going on there at that length, I mean, I think he's saying what's coming into his head at that moment. I definitely don't think he's filtering it anyway. And I think he believes it. Now, the problem of all of this is that, and you played a part of that discussion, some of his discussions about Afghanistan, it's quite clear at this point that he does not know the basic recent history of the region. Some of his statements about Russia and the Soviet Union going into Afghanistan and why it went in and what happened as a play out of that have betrayed baseline ignorance, not merely of the history, but also the stance that the United States took. And unfortunately, if you don't understand the stances that the United States took at certain points, be they good or bad, be whether you agree with them or not, then you can't begin to have a reasonable approach to what's happening now. Because alliances, connections, commitments sometimes extend back for decades. Now, Mattis, again, whether you like him or not, understood all this stuff. And I think that did, in fact, create a huge clash. Because Trump was coming from a place of deep ignorance, saying, well, let's just do this. You know, let's just go do that. And Mattis was saying, you can do that, you know, but if we do, it's going to have these consequences, those consequences, et cetera, et cetera. I would say that Trump is the exact equivalent of another man who thought he could be a general, and that is Dick Cheney. I think Trump and Cheney in this regard are exceptionally similar men, and what makes them similar is their combination of confidence and ignorance. They confidently do things that they know nothing about. And that anybody with any experience or any knowledge runs screaming from the room when they encounter such a person.
I highly recommend Vice, the new movie out. It was amazing to watch because it kind of felt like I was watching the good old days. And isn't that tragic?
Well, I mean, here's the one difference. I mean, as we talk about someone, and again, I think the Cheney-Trump connection is a very real one.
And how they turned Christian Bale into Dick Cheney, I'll never understand. He must have had a lot of turkey pot pies.
That's a lot of work, man. That's acting. but, you know, here's the one thing is, Cheney was still, you know, he had come from a relatively working class background. And he had had to struggle at a couple of points. And that made him devious, calculating, I think strong and confident in some ways. But at least he did try a little bit to prepare for stuff. Trump, you know, always a child of privilege, always bailed out when he got in trouble, certainly well aware of his ineptitude and, you know, I mean, well aware that he's not prepared for a lot of what he ends up in. And so he's created a confidence rooted in, I'm just going with my gut. I think Cheney was a little more nuanced in some ways. And so can we say that we are experiencing a degeneration in our megalomaniacal, damaging, destructive political players? Yes. It's getting worse.
The consequences for this are stunning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, you know, some people have a different view on this. This is the Attorney General, the acting Attorney General of the United States.
Jeff Flake is now...
That's not it.
Sir, Mr. President, I will start by highlighting the fact that you stayed in Washington, D.C. over the holidays, giving up Christmas with your family, New Year's with your family, trying to bring an end to this shutdown and security to our southern border. You have demonstrated your dedication to delivering on this critical issue for our country and for the American people.
Now, isn't that nice? Why can't you say something nice like that, John?
I think monarchs, like monarchs, kaisers, kings, you know, they hire people to do that, right? You know, they come in and say, "You, sir, make way for the most glorious king who has ever set foot on, you know, see the sun king rise." you know, I mean, it's just the patheticness of Matthew Whitaker, right, is that this is a guy who exists wholly to do exactly what he just did right there.
Mm-hmm.
Tell Trump he's great, right? Now, again, even in that, he got it wrong. because, of course, this thing of missing Christmas with your family. Do you remember on Christmas Eve when Trump was telling children, you know, that they were somehow, there's something wrong with believing in Santa?
Uh-huh.
Right? Who was sitting next to him?
Melania.
Yeah, so I'm not quite sure that Matthew Whitaker even got that right. But, of course, he did his duty. And, you know, this is one of the real problems of media coverage of Trump at this point. Trump's getting weirder, more desperate, more scared, obviously, as he faces, you know, an accountability moment that will be real. And yet our media does have, you know, it's a complicated thing. It has some duty to cover the guy. Unfortunately, when you cover the guy, people like you get clips like that.
And then we've got the Trump whispers. And the most clever of them all is Ann Coulter. The other day, she said, oh, he's going to cave. He's going to cave. I know why she's doing that. She's doing that just to keep him bucked up.
She's talking to him.
Yeah.
And you know what? I mean, with all due respect, I have debated Ann Coulter on the BBC. I've been around her in a lot of different settings, and I disagree with her on everything, okay?
Yeah, but she's a lot of fun to talk to.
She's lively and fun. She's a quick thinker. And C, she's got every right to be doing that. right? The fascinating circumstance that we're in is we have a president who pays attention to that sort of thing. And what a difference that is from Obama. Whether you liked Obama or didn't like the guy, he was a huge consumer of media. He clearly read a lot of media, but he didn't just go to his side. He went all over the place. He gathered a tremendous amount of information, and he made decisions from a place of strength. I would argue that Ann Coulter recognizes the profound weakness of Donald Trump, the desperation of Donald Trump to maintain his ties to the base, and as such, speaks to that. Now, she has every right to do that. I'm not going to, you know, I wish she was right on the issues. I wish she was more responsible, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But she's not the problem.
Well,
the president.
The hundreds of thousands of federal workers that aren't getting paid right now are paying a terrible price for this. And, you know, Trump is talking about them being Democrats. Whatever. That's just a terrible way to act when you're the commander in chief and you've got a staff that's not being paid.
I would go so far as to say, and I know that some of our you know, non-constitutionally inclined friends would disagree. But the prospect of the president might be punishing federal workers
for their party Democrats. Affiliation would be illegal.
I think it is a clearly defined constitutional or impeachable offense. Because if you look back at the articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon, you will find evidence that using the office to punish your political foes or people that disagree with you was right up there on the list. So it's an interesting thing that
Maybe Robert Mueller is taking notes.
But let
me just add parenthetically here that the president also may want to think about all the small contractors, many of whom are probably Republicans, that are being punished and not being paid right now.
Well, he knows a little something about not paying small contractors.
Oh, he has a lot of practice in that area. All right, here is House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Situation in which you would accept even a dollar of wall funding for this president in order to reopen the government.
A dollar? $1? Yeah, $1.
How high was you going to go? Are you going to go?
No, you said a dollar. You said a dollar. Well, that's not your question. You said a dollar. I'll answer your question.
The
fact is, a wall is an immorality. It's not who we are as a nation.
There you go. There's the speaker.
The speaker, she is having a good time.
She is having a good time.
She's a very different speaker than she was in her previous run. She's coming in a very different way.
She's got a different caucus.
Different caucus, of course. But also, you know, she has been through a lot, right? She's been through the experience of having been a speaker. She's also been through the experience of being in opposition. She has, you know, watched this all very closely. And the thing is, I think a lot of our Republican friends who love to scream and yell about Nancy Pelosi and target her and attack her and stuff, they'd better be careful, because the more exposure she gets, the more we are seeing her as a very, very sharp, quick-witted, confident, strong, and informed, knowledgeable political figure. Somebody asked her in one of these interviews, you know, do you see yourself as the equal of the president? And she replied, the Constitution does.
Well, and for the last 2 years, we really haven't had a speaker.
No, we haven't. And in fairness, if we're really going to get specific about this, the Constitution defines very, very different roles for the speaker and the president. I'm not sure that they really are the equal, but I think what Pelosi was talking about there is that they are leaders of co-equal branches of government, right? They are key players in co-equal branches of government. And the thing that Paul Ryan never understood was he never looked beyond himself. He, you know, I assume every day there must have been a mirror on his desk, right? And he just like kind of kept looking at it going, wow, you look like a good speaker, Mr. Speaker. But Nancy Pelosi looks at the institution. She's much more conscious of, you know, again, Congress, the legislative branch is a co-equal branch of government. She speaks in that language, and that is going to very rapidly redefine, I think, a lot of understandings of the House. I think people, literally, I think a year from now, if we're talking, Sly, I think we will be talking about a really different kind of just picture of the federal government, with the House as a significantly elevated force, because obviously it's the opposition, but beyond that, because, again, whether you like Pelosi or not, I think she is somebody who's in their moment right now and very ready for this fight.
One more clip from Pelosi.
Are you willing to come up and give him some of this money for the wall? Because apparently that's the sticking point.
No, nothing for the wall. We're talking about border security.
Nothing for the wall, but that means it's
a non-starter.
Well,
we can go through this all back and forth. Mm-hmm. No. How many more times can we say no? Nothing for the wall.
What? No.
Perfect. You know, and again, there you saw it. You know what a big difference with Pelosi is from a lot of politicians at this point? She actually listens to the question and engages with it. You know, you have a lot of people just out there with talking points. If you just look at the two clips you played, and if you frankly look at a lot of the interviews she's doing, she's paying very close attention. She's very on top of it. And then if we go back to December, when she and Schumer and Trump were sitting in the room talking about the possible shutdown, and you look at how Pelosi pressed him and challenged him in that setting, she is going to, I don't think anybody can be the equivalent of Trump as regards, you know, public relations, attention, you know, how the media deals with it. But I do think that at least for this period, and probably for a substantial time going forward, she's going to be the counterbalance to Trump. And I suspect she will be on the news pretty much every night.
We'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SlysOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
And we're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works and the United Steelworkers. Joining us again, John Nichols. For me, yesterday, or the day before when Congress was sworn in, watching Lauren Underwood sworn in, the new congresswoman from Illinois.
Yeah.
She has Dennis Hastert's old seat.
Stunning when you think about it.
It is stunning.
And also,
she's a nurse. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen her interviewed, but
I have. She's fantastic.
Incredible woman.
And she also, but when we talk about, again, this concept of who she is, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York, and like, actually, several of these other new members coming in, not all of them, but several of them, she is somebody who wasn't politically empowered 2 years ago, right? And Donald Trump became president. A lot of people got engaged, said, you know, boy, we really got to do something about this. This is a bad thing. And against unimaginable odds, they stepped up and ended up in Congress. Think about that.
She's a black woman who grew up in Naperville. Remember how Republican Naperville used to be?
I do. And I also, I think also she has a superb way of making connections across all sorts of lines that are usually used to divide people. And I will go so far as to suggest right now that because Lauren Underwood is very young, I think you might be looking at Dick Durbin's successor.
Well,
Durbin will be there for a good long time. I'm not suggesting.
There's some woman already challenging Dick Durbin, who just took a House seat or a state House seat in Illinois. But I don't really think he has anything to worry about this time.
But you understand what I'm saying?
No, I agree.
Line, I think, or a governor or something. I think she is going to have tremendous resonance politically.
So her style is completely different than Alexandria's, right? Complete different style. Explain that.
Oh, well, they come from different places, for one thing. One's representing suburbia,
you know, essentially Dennis Hastert's old district. The other is representing a tough urban district in New York City. And so by the very nature, they come out of different political contexts. But beyond that, they are, in fact, different people. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is somebody who, frankly, studied a lot of economics, has been around politics in a lot of different ways. In 2016, for instance, was, you know, working as a, you know, at relatively low level, but engaged with the Bernie Sanders campaign. And she comes in, I've interviewed her at great length. She comes in as somebody who really does know and understand a lot of politics. I would suggest that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is the equivalent of Paul Wellstone. It's not to say they're the same person or the same style, but when Wellstone arrived in the U.S. Senate in 1990, in his first elected position, by the way, that's, you know, his first win was for the U.S. Senate, just as her first win was for Congress, he came with immense knowledge of the institution and the issues. There's no question she is the same kind of person, just younger, but the same kind of person. And early on, that's going to get a lot of pushback. That's going to cause some controversy. If you look back at Wellstone, when he initially arrived in the Senate, there was a lot of churn around him. But it is not rooted in, you know, a lack of knowledge or ineptness or anything like that. It is rooted in the fact that institutions sometimes have a hard time dealing with someone who's got their number, so to speak. And what I think Ocasio-Cortez is going to do is push for reforms, push for change. She's going to, you know, like, not go along with things that a lot of other folks will. And that's terrific. It's a healthy, useful part of Congress. She will succeed at times. She will not succeed at other times. But the key thing for her that does distinguish her from figures like this in the past, and we've had a long history of people who've come in this way and had profound impact on our Congress, the thing that distinguishes her is that she has a massive social media following, a tremendous number of people who are really interested in her, and frankly, mainstream media is very, very interested in her. She's a story that sells, frankly, for better or worse. And so as a result, she's going to have a bully pulpit that is significant, and my sense is she's going to push the Democratic Party to be bolder in a whole bunch of ways.
Let's talk about your conversation with Governor-elect Tony Evers, who I think made a couple mistakes yesterday.
What do you think his mistakes were?
I think his mistakes, first of all, supporting a bill criminalizing drunk driving, possibly even a felony the first time, terrible.
I agree with you.
Absolutely terrible.
And it's going exact wrong direction
Well, would the campaign on wanting to reduce the state's prison population by half and then support that is stupid.
Well, it's also, let me just say that, you know, he's talking about a bill being proposed by, I think, Alberta
Darling and Jim Ott.
Jim Ott, right. I strongly believe that Wisconsin has fought a lonely battle to try and have a different approach on this. Now, that does not mean, I think we do have drinking and driving problems in Wisconsin and things that need to be addressed, and I'm not trying to diminish or deny it, but the idea that criminalization of this, that somehow putting somebody in jail for this is going to affect it, is going to have a profound impact on it, I think is just ignorance.
Well, talk to someone who is in the court system. Here's the difference. In Illinois, where the first offense is a misdemeanor, they get plea bargained, right? Wisconsin actually gets more convictions because they can be done, first of all, in municipal court. They can Marilyn Townsend's court there in Sherwood Hills. They can get a conviction. They don't get swept up in the circuit court system in a lot of cases, where they don't have time for a lot of this, and you don't have plea bargains, you get a conviction. In a lot of cases in Illinois, it's turned out to be counterproductive. So he needs to listen to people that are actually in the field, and talk to criminal defense attorneys and talk to judges before he goes down this path. And the notion that it would be a felony, first offense, that's outrageous. The other mistake he obviously made was where I think he got ahead of his skis, saying he wasn't going to follow some of the laws that the legislature passed. I'm not sure it's the way he should have put it.
I interviewed him about it. That came up in our discussion, right? I think that it's a very interesting thing. What you're going to find is he's not actually saying that, or he's saying something a little different. What he said to me in our conversation is that he intends to follow the law because it's the law. However, when he is sued, because that's how the action will be taken to try and upset some of these laws, or when lawsuits come forward, he is not going to defend what the legislature did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a lot more nuance to this, and it gets into, frankly, how the fight over what the legislature did in the lame duck is going to play out. And so
I think he's learning, though. He's got to be very precise in his language.
And I think there was some confusion there, although in the conversation I had with him, I think there was a good deal more clarity. I will also let you know that I think in the State Journal, bizarrely, at the end of a story on all this, some pretty strong clarification. So my sense is that the clash that some people think might be coming is actually not coming.
Did you ask him about his appointments?
Yeah, we did talk a bit about it. We had a long conversation, talked about his strategy, right? You know, how he's going to do this thing. And as you know, I don't happen to agree with all of his appointments.
I thought the two yesterday were good.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. It happened when I went to, do the conversation with him. who did I run into in the hallway? First person I ran into was Brian Schimming. And if listeners know, Brian Schimming's a Republican for a long time, but very hail fellow well met. And he was in the hallway. And then up comes Joel Brennan, who's the new key aide.
DOA?
Yeah, yeah. And so here you are standing in a circle talking about politics and talking about all this. And in, you know, classic, I have to tell you, old school Wisconsin. You know what I mean? It really pretty genial, good-spirited. And then a moment later, I'm up the elevator and I run into the new head of corrections, the new head of revenue, Peter Barca. And it's one of the things that Tony Evers is doing is he's appointing a lot of Wisconsinites. And again, some of these people I don't happen to be the biggest fan of. So, you know, obviously I don't think there's any governor I've ever been satisfied with all of his appointments.
Hopefully. Well, anyone in Ron Kind's office is a bad idea.
I tend to, to be honest, that was an area I wasn't overly thrilled with. did you notice, by the way, Ron Kind voted against Pelosi?
Yeah, he voted for John Lewis.
Well, that's kind of good. I mean, I can give Lewis because I like Lewis.
Yeah, I loved watching the list of some of the people that were voted for in that, in those sort of symbolic gestures. So you can bet that if any, most of those people that voted against her, if they had needed their vote, they would have.
I suspect that's the case. But anyway, to get down to Evers, what we talked about was how do you do this thing now that, because I'm really interested in that, and I know a lot of people are, you know, there's all sorts of other elements of gossip or whatever that people want to talk about with all this, but I'm interested in this balance between the governor's office and the legislature at this point. How do you do it? And I will tell you, it was really interesting because, Evers is extremely relaxed about this. And I even said to him at one point, you know, people are going to say you're taking this too casually. You're not really going for it on all this. And he said, he's very clear that he didn't think people want that. He thinks what people want is a way to engage with the thing. So what he's going to do as soon as he gets his budget together, and it will be a budget that addresses a lot of the issues that concern Wisconsinites and, frankly, that he ran on, he's going right back out with town halls statewide, and it'll be the most public and publicized budget process that we've ever had. And it's a very interesting strategy to bring the people into the thing to build support for the ideas. I asked him, I said, are you talking about really effectively kind of campaigning, you know, carrying a campaign forward?
And he fully accepted the word. He said, yeah, that's exactly it. That's it. And to go out and actually, you know, tell people what you're trying to do, talk about it a lot, go all around Wisconsin and try and build, you know, a real constituency for things as a counterbalance to, you know, kind of the insider game that you saw with the lame duck and that you will obviously see with the legislature's potential attempt to develop its own budget, things of that nature.
And to break open records laws.
Right, the whole bit. And so it's very interesting that he's, I have to tell you, my sense of it is he's much more ready for this than a lot of his own supporters think he is. And then I had a conversation yesterday with former judge Paul Higginbotham, who's been a key player in the transition, very, very much associated with it. And what the judge was telling me is that he just came away from the whole process with a very strong sense that Evers knows what he's doing, that he's got a real, you know, he's got a theory here and a plan. And it was interesting. I asked him, well, who are the governors that you see as role models or, you know, potential role models? And the two he volunteered right away were Gaylord Nelson and Tommy Thompson.
Those are good picks.
That's what I mean. And you know, and I think your many savvy listeners know, that's two sides of the same coin, right? People from small towns, and Evers is another small town, Wisconsinite, who understand how to work across a lot of lines of division, who have some, you know, relatively firmly held views, but really want to get things done. It's interesting.
It's going to be fascinating to watch. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.